there was definitely tears shed over all of those different instances. But I was like, you know what, God, I believe that you're faithful, and none of my roommates were home this morning. So I was like, you know what, most important thing, I've been trying to eat healthy. We're going to eat some food, and we're going to work on the teaching, and we're going to make sure that we got everything. And then anything else that fits in. But this is like top priorities. So I put on some worship music, and I was definitely jamming to Waymaker. I don't know if you guys know that. I think, have we sung it here before? No? I thought we did. The whole point is it's talking. Maybe we sang it in Salt Lake. I was like, I feel like we sang it together. But the whole song is just about God and how he like makes a way, Waymaker. And so it was one of those little Bethel clips from Facebook, and it says, Waymaker, miracle worker, promise keeper, light in the darkness, that is who you are. And then it keeps going. Well, there's this one lady, and she is just belting it out, and she's just screaming that. So I'm, like, in my kitchen, like, making some chicken, and I'm just, like, dancing around, and I'm like, wow, I haven't been in this place in a long time where I just felt comfortable in my house, and none of my roommates were home, so it didn't really matter. Like, I can sing, I can do whatever, and not all my roommates are Christian, so, you know, screaming out worship music in the kitchen is not always, like, the go-to thing. I totally could do it, but I might get a few weird looks, which I'm trying to get over. But, yeah, so it was just one of those things where I was like, you know what? No, God, I'm just going to trust and believe despite all these things that have happened and just put my faith in that. So then Abigail singing all those songs, and I'm talking about the persistent widow. So it's going to be fun. If anybody would like to, open to Luke 18, and it's verses 1 through 8. I have New King James. If Chris has the verses, which I have my Bible, so you're good either way. Do you know what translation that one is? New King James. Okay, so they're all New King James. Yeah, so if anybody needs that. Okay, so this is the persistent widow / the unjust judge. So whatever they gave, whatever people decide to give the name to. So we're going to talk about, well, a couple of those different things. So verse 1, then he spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart, saying there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. Now there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice for me from my adversary, and that he would not for a while. But afterward he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her. Lest her continual coming, she wearies me. Then the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge said. And shall not God avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? So we have a couple of different people in the story. So the first one is the judge. So tell me something about the judge. What did it say? He was shrewd. He didn't regard God or man. So he didn't fear God, and he really could care less about the people, which is a terrible judge. Like, why are you even in that position? Like, you're supposed to be serving the people. Okay, did it say anything else about him? What happens in the end? He gives in to shut her up. He's like, can you please stop? Okay. So then on the other hand, we have the widow. So what about the widow? She was persistent. Okay. She was wronged. Something happened to her. She was trying to get justice. So in their culture, which is what a couple of the different commentaries was talking about, was the fact that she was a widow meant that the issue that she had could possibly mean it's a life or death situation. Because when she came to him saying, like, avenge me, it doesn't specify what that is. But in knowing that she's a widow, that meant that she was dependent on her father first and then her husband. Well, now her husband has passed away. So now the responsibility for taking care of her goes to her sons, her family members. So if she didn't have any, it would then go to essentially charity, is who would be taking care of her. And if the city wasn't helping provide that, or people weren't doing that for her, that was legitimately a life or death kind of thing. It could be like a very dangerous position that she's in. So we don't know exactly what she's like pleading a case for, but it could be very dire. And this judge, as she continually comes and comes and comes to him, is like, no, I don't care. I mean, it does kind of say he didn't care. But so you have this widow who's in this seemingly powerless position. And then you have this judge who's supposed to be in this very powerful position. And one of the very, very interesting things that I found out about this chapter was that we all read the part where it says, "Yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest she wearies me." So we read that and we're like, oh, she was just so annoying. And he was just like, fine, I'll do it. Stop bugging me. Like, you've been begging me and begging me. But what the actual context in the original translation means, she was, like, really feisty, and she was essentially threatening to give him a black eye. So essentially, she was threatening physical violence. And he's like, okay, all right, I'll do it. That's fine. I had no idea about that, but multiple commentaries were talking about that. And I thought that was, yeah. So we think that this little, and I don't know, I always picture her as this like old little old lady, but it doesn't say her age in here. It just says that she's a widow. Like, she could have been young. Like, we don't know. And so I always picture this like feisty, like, you know, kind of like a grandma kind of like person, like this feisty little old lady. But she might not have been. But regardless, she was like not having this. She had asked him so many times, and he didn't care that she was about to get up in arms about it. So that kind of puts a different twist on this parable when you start reading it that way, and you're like, oh, okay. Oh, what? Yeah, it's interesting, right? That he was intimidated by this widow, and I think along with the fact that she had consistently come up, but it said, one of the commentaries said that he was afraid that she was at her wit's end and she was about to snap and cause physical violence on him, which is why he's like, I don't really care about you. I don't care about your situation. I'm trying to protect myself. Like, I don't want to get abused. Like, please, like. But then we have this other person in the story, well, kind of outside the story, and it starts talking about God. And so this is the part where we're kind of like, oh, okay, if we read this story and just kind of like gloss over it, we think that God's saying, okay, I just need you to beg me over and over and over again in your situation, and then I'll do it. But when we have the whole context, we realize that that's not at all what's happening. And Jesus is pretty clear that that's not what's happening in the last couple verses. He does say in verse 6, hear what the unjust judge said, but then he clarifies, and shall not God avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? So I kind of jump back to like a Matthew, like an ask, seek, knock kind of thing. So in Matthew 7 through 12, it says, ask and it will be given to you, seek and you will find, knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be open. Or what man is there among you, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? Therefore, oh, that verse is, it's part of it, but it doesn't go with what I'm going to say, so I'm going to leave it out. But this is pretty much mimicking exactly what Jesus said in this parable, where he's saying, no, like, I will avenge you speedily. And I think the hard part is speedily to him is not always speedily to us. Those timelines don't always match. And so we sit here in these places and say, even in things that have wronged us, things that have, like, we just don't understand why these things are happening or how they happened. And we question, you know, we ask God, why? I don't understand. You know, this is not, this doesn't feel like you're avenging me speedily. Like, this doesn't feel like these people are having justice served on their behalf, you know? But we realize that it's not about begging, because Matthew 6:7 is talking about not praying with vain repetition as the Pharisees did, so that men would hear their, you know, many words. So we know that it's not about that. And then 1 Thessalonians, let's see, I marked them because my phone's not working and I didn't want you guys to sit while I'm like flipping through pages. 1 Thessalonians 5:16-18 says, "Rejoice always and pray without ceasing. In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you." So he's talking about praying without ceasing, which I feel like also goes along with this parable. And so I was reading a bunch of commentaries about this one too, and it made me laugh because, one of them made a really good point about how if you're praying without ceasing in the thought of that's all you're ever doing is praying, he's like, then you're not going to be doing any works and then your works are dead. So then actually that's like disregarding your point. And I was like, I never even thought about it that way. But he's not talking about praying of every moment of every second of every day. He's talking about your heart posture and continuously being in that place of bringing things to God. And one of the commentaries even said, praying in the good times and in the bad times. Instead of just like going to God when you need something or just praising him when something's good, that you're consistently bringing your heart before him and that you're praying in all things. And I thought that that was also a really cool interpretation of the verse. Jason, do you have a testimony that you would like to share that goes with this?
I wasn't sure you remembered me or not. No, that's good. Yeah, so this is also interesting. I guess Abigail was in spirit, and then I shared something. I actually have a testimony of a time that Rachel and I went to Acts 2, and I just happened to remember it when we were talking in the back before service started and thought I'd share it, and she's like, I think you told me, but remind me. So basically what happened was we went to Acts 2. They have a healing room, and it's pretty awesome because I just love the way it's very organized, but also very spirit-led. But what was interesting was when they brought me back in the prayer room, I was getting prayer for my shoulder. I had prayer multiple times. I went to Bethel, like, you know, got prayer there. Nothing happened. And so trying to be in a place of, like, you know, this is a new day. I believe in healing. And seeing what the Lord would do with, you know, faith. when they started praying for me, I felt like the Lord was trying to go and show me something. It was very interesting. And the guy that was praying for me made a comment. But in his prayer, the only thing I really specifically remember was he said, we don't come to you as beggars. And being a person who is very visual and image-driven, I immediately had this, like, image of blind Bartimaeus on the side of the road and, like, crying out to, you know, Jesus. And I'm like, well, I mean, Lord, I'm having this conversation with God in my head while he's praying for me. And he, you know, I'm saying, Lord, like, he came to you as a beggar. He was a beggar. I mean, how more can you come to the Lord as a beggar than blind Bartimaeus? And it felt like the Lord answered me, and he said, no, Jason, he didn't come to me as a beggar. He knew who he was. He called out, Son of David, have mercy on me. And you can't call out to God, Son of David, have mercy on me, unless you know who Jesus is and you know who you are in relation to the Son of David. And that all speaks into the lineage of Jesus Christ. Like, he knew that Jesus was the Son of David, the one that was prophesied. Like, this blind man that was a beggar knew who Jesus was more than, I think, even his disciples at that very moment. And then this man willingly, you know, went through the crowd to go and actually meet with Jesus. And being blind, like, actually Jesus didn't go to him. He came through the crowd. And so God was speaking to me through this image, and he's like, Jason, do you come to me as a beggar, or do you come to me as a son? Do you recognize me as who I am, or do you want just get a handout from me? And even when blind Bartimaeus came to Jesus, and I'm seeing myself coming to Jesus, you know, asking him for something, he's like, what can I do for you? What can I help you with? You know, most even commentators are like, he's blind. Like, why the heck would Jesus ask him a question like that? But being someone who needs something, sometimes we need to go and actually be asked the question of what we need from the person who can provide it, so that we can know in our own selves, we can recognize in our own selves that we need something. We actually have a need, and we're willing to go and be humble enough to go and ask for it. And so I felt like, even though I was asking for prayer for my shoulder, like the Lord was trying to leading me into healing my understanding, and that it was more important that I understood my sonship more than just getting a quick fix to my shoulder and then walking around broken on the inside anyway.
That's so good. But yeah, just like in these verses, it's not that we're begging God, but there is a level of pursuing and persistence of coming before the Lord and saying, like, I believe this, and I'm laying it at you, at your feet. In Luke, it says, for those who cry out day and night. It's not that they were idle. It's not that they were just sitting there and not doing anything about it. You know, they were asking the Lord. They were coming before him. And so I find it interesting that all of the commentaries kind of danced around this thought that I had. But if we look at, like, the time period that it's in, I really think, and he does kind of hint at it. So within context of the chapter, in chapter 17, there's another verse that's talking about how it's really kind of stating that end times kind of mindset, where he's talking about having faith, but he's talking about coming back. And multiple other parts of the chapter before and parts of it after are talking about having faith, but a lot of them kind of hint at, like, a Jesus coming back kind of thing. So even in this, it says, will I find faith on the earth when I come back? And so I'm thinking about how, when it says the last days, which it doesn't specifically say in this scripture, all of the believers thought that they were in the last days. And in some regard, maybe they were. But they were being persecuted, heavily persecuted in that time frame. So if you're thinking about this parable in the context of what they were experiencing, the people that were crying out day and night were probably being martyred, like, in the context of what's happening. Now, it doesn't specifically say that. This is why I'm kind of adding it on to the end in my thoughts. But it all kind of, commentaries were kind of leading that way. And then they all just kind of, like, skipped that verse. And I'm like, wait, no, that was the verse I wanted to look at. But 2 Timothy kind of gives a little bit of context of what I was thinking. So 2 Timothy 2:9 says, he's talking about Jesus, for which I suffered trouble as an evildoer. Paul is talking, but for Jesus he suffered trouble as an evildoer, even to the point of chains, but the word of God is not chained. And I thought that was just a powerful statement. He's like, I suffer chains, but the word of God is not chained. So I realized that in context of this, like, time period, like, there is persecution happening, and I feel like Jesus is foreshadowing the fact that this persecution is going to be happening, and that when he comes back, are they going to have grown weary? Are they going to have stopped? Are they going to, obviously, at some point, you know, they deny him and all this stuff happens, but I think that's kind of what he's getting at. Like, so all this stuff isn't really making sense yet, but it's going to, because this stuff is going to be happening, and I'm trying to prepare you for what's going to be happening. Like, will I find faith on the earth when I come back, even after you guys go through all this stuff, even after all of this, am I still going to be faithful to you? Like, are you still going to see me in that way? And I need you guys to cry out. I need you guys to be persistent. And even though we are not in the same boat that they are in here in America right now, I think it also serves the purpose of saying, like, when we go through trials and tribulations, when things happen to us, when we are experiencing things where it feels like God isn't being faithful or the timeline isn't what we thought, like, does he find faithfulness in us? Does he find that we're consistently coming to him, not begging as like a lowly servant, but coming to him and saying, like, God, I know that you're faithful. Like, will you, like, avenge this situation? Like, will you come through in this situation, even if it's not what I thought? Like, will you come serve justice in whatever it is that we're facing. So the persistent widow was persistent, but she was feisty. She wasn't just like annoying. She was like intense about it because she knew what she deserved and she went after it. I'm not saying that we should go beat people up. But what I'm saying is that we should have that that ferociousness within us to bring the things to God and said, you said that you would avenge this. So I don't know what it looks like, and I'm not going to try to tell you what it looks like, but here it is. Like, this is the injustice that has been done. You know, this is the person that died too soon. This is the, you know, the thing that's happening in my life, the sickness that's in my body that you said that you died on the cross to heal. You know, this is my family member that's not saved that you came and laid down your life for. You know, those kinds of situations where we come to God and say, I understand, as Jason said, the relationship that I have. I understand that I can ask you for these things and that you give us good gifts. So this is a gift that I'm asking for, you know. So that's really kind of all the thoughts that I have. And I wanted to share that stuff at the beginning because I want you guys to know that I'm not just coming to give you guys a pep talk. Like, I've kind of been like living through this and working it out in my own life as I've seen things that feel like God isn't coming through, that he's not avenging injustice that's happening. Even as believers are legitimately crying out day and night for like the situations that I mentioned earlier. So that's what I wanted to leave you guys with.